Welcome back, everybody, to Arthropod, your favorite entomology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jonathan Larson.
I'm your other host, Jody Green.
And we are both from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and we are excited to be here with you in your ears today, talking to you about insect overwintering strategies.
Party in the winter.
It's a holiday party, almost.
Maybe.
In October. It would be Thanksgiving where you're from, right?
It was Thanksgiving on Monday.
It was Thanksgiving on Monday.
Last Monday, yeah.
We still got our Thanksgiving coming up here in the U.S., though.
Bonus for me.
Double Thanksgiving! But today we're going to talk about weather and about how insects react to that weather and overwintering strategies. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, it is getting colder. Today, when I left my house, it was 38 degrees. I do have a nice jacket on right now, keeping myself warm. And we're all kind of getting ready for some of those wintery activities and turning the heat on and everything. And the insects have to start thinking about this kind of weather as well, right, Jody?
Yes, they can't wear vests.
They don't have down vests that they can get at Columbia or anything like that. They have to think of other ways of protecting themselves. And I think that they have some really cool strategies in order to survive the winter. And you were mentioning before that there are behavioral ways that they do this and that there are physiological ways that we do this.
Yep. So their body can adapt physiologically. So it changes so that they will use up less energy. They don't have to eat. They just kind of slow down. But they also have some kind of things in their body that will make them freeze tolerant.
The freeze tolerant. So like they freeze the right part of their body rather than the wrong part of their body?
Yes. Well, they can decrease the level of water and moisture in their body so it doesn't freeze. And they also can create compounds such as?
Antifreeze.
Yeah. So like alcohols and sugars. So it is a type of antifreeze so that they don't freeze.
And I think it's important for us to chat about this because it's one of the big questions I get every year around this time is, well, how are these bugs around next year? Like, why don't they all just die?
Yeah, well, they have different insects go through different phases and types of metamorphosis, so they can overwinter in different phases. But if nothing overwintered, and a lot of times people are like, I can't wait for them to all die in the winter. And I don't have the heart to tell them most of the time, well, they're not really going to all die. Right. Like, someone's got to survive. So they do that in different stages, life stages. So
yeah. A lot of them do eggs. I know of some insects that are eggs right now and are going to be eggs all winter long. Bagworms would be a possible example.
Ooh,
for that.
Bagworms.
The female has laid all of her eggs in her case, in her bag, and they're going to be in there all winter long before they hatch next spring in order to proliferate the next generation of bagworms.
Praying mantis?
Praying mantis egg cases. That's a good example. And eggs, it seems like that would be an easy way of surviving the winter, don't you think?
Yeah, because they're not... They don't need to eat.
Right.
Their mom put them where they're protected.
Yeah. And they're kind of usually covered in something. Mm-hmm. So that's a good way of doing it. Others are grubs or nymphs or some sort of larval stage that they're going to overwinter as. The white grubs. And Jody is impersonating a green June beetle white grub for us right now. They do an army crawl on their back.
It's my daughter's favorite dance.
It's her favorite. Is the green June beetle dance?
Yes, that's her soccer scoring dance.
I love it. I wish her team name was the Green June Beetles.
I wish too.
We'll have to propose that next year to your soccer commissioner. So yeah, these grubs, what they do is they go below the frost line in the soil. The soil adds a level of protection for them. And if they get below that frost line, they can just wait out the winter. They kind of go to sleep. Essentially.
Yeah. So their metabolism will slow down. Yeah. They're not really
They don't need to eat.
Eating.
They're not really doing much. It's a little bit like a bear, I guess, when it goes into hibernation in a cave, but just down in the ground. If they're not using a larval stage or a nymphal stage to do this, the ones that are larvae, if they have that complete metamorphosis, they may also use their pupal case or their pupal stage.
That would
stage.
Be a good time to, like, there's nothing going on right there. I mean, there's a lot of development happening, maybe.
But you're kind of quiet and boring when you're a pupa. Mm-hmm.
They usually kind of wait it out until like the spring then actually to.
And some famous examples of that would be a lot of our moths. If you think about the giant silk moths that we have here in North America, the Cecropia moth and others, they're a pupal case up in a tree usually, sort of hanging out, wrapped up in a leaf.
Right. And those are all cool things that if you find those kind of things, and also like the praying mantis eggs and you bring them inside, though it kind of messes things up, right?
Yeah. If you bring in an overwintering case like that or egg case or pupal case, insects develop according to degree day accumulation. Mm-hmm. And degree days, it's a certain amount of days over a certain temperature that their body registers, like a counter, if you were counting people that were coming into an event. And so they count a day over 70 degrees as a day of development, for example. And every day below that, it doesn't move the needle forward. So they don't develop or they don't move forward. But if you bring them inside and you're a normal person that turns the heat on in the winter, then they're going to be accumulating those degree days faster. And in January or February, you could end up with a beautiful Cecropia moth that you can't do anything with, or maybe 500 baby mantises.
Yeah, and that has happened. That's happened in grad school. That's happened with friends at home that bring things in because they think they're like humans and they're going to get cold. So they bring in their pupa, and then they have this beautiful moth, and there's nothing to feed it. It can be very heartbreaking.
Absolutely. I did it once on accident with a Cecropia moth, and it was like March when she came out. And you just feel kind of bad because you're like, I don't know if any of your friends are outdoors right now. Right. And all you live to do is mate and die.
It's true. It's true. And a lot of times people want to know what to feed it. Anytime they bring something in, they'll have like a cracker in there. And that's not the right food source, but it is very thoughtful.
At least you're thinking about them. So all these different strategies we're talking about are methods of dormancy, either as a larva, as a nymph, as an egg, as a pupa. But you can also go into winter and be dormant as an adult, right?
Yeah, and the pests that we'll talk about today are all pests, actually, because they come into our homes. They're not pests all the rest of the year, but in the winter, when they want to survive, their behavior is to find shelter.
Right.
And unfortunately for us, they kind of share our homes or our buildings or our outbuildings.
So what are some natural places that they might overwinter?
Very commonly under bark, in, you know, holes in trees, under rocks, logs, things like that.
Leaf litter.
Rubbish.
Rubbish, which is part of why we do garden sanitation, right?
Yes.
Squash vine borer and some of those other pests. They use those materials. If you leave them in the garden area, they hide in them over winter. And they're like, it's nice and warm. I feel really comfy.
And the minute pirate bugs.
Minute pirate bugs can hang out in there for sure. So as an adult, they're dormant rather than as an egg or as a pupa. And they've also got, you mentioned some things about their bodies that can be different to protect them. But why is this a problem for us sometimes?
Well, because they come in such huge numbers. So it's not just one or two. It might be like 50, 100, 500. And that scares people. Anytime there's a lot of something, it's scary, right? If you saw a lot of rabbits, if I saw 30 rabbits in my yard.
That's freaky.
Right.
30 clowns.
Oh, no, not at all. Three. But when they come in such large numbers, it scares people. And some of them leave stains, some of them smell, and some of them will even bite.
So we have a list of invaders that you wanted to discuss today, right?
Yeah, I would say they're the top five that people come in and complain about.
The fearsome five?
Maybe.
Infamous five?
Yes.
I like alliteration, but I can't come up with one for five. Frightful five.
Maybe. Yes, and it's actually close to Halloween.
That's true. Ooh, spooky bug time.
That's when it gets cold. So do you want me to go through the five?
Well, yeah, let's start with number five.
Ooh, these aren't in any particular order.
That's okay.
Okay. It is the multicolored Asian lady beetle.
M-C-A-L-B.
M-A-L-B.
Right. Oh, yeah. Multicolored is one word.
It's the malb.
Yeah, the malb.
I hashtag malb.
So what kind of bug is this?
So it is a ladybug, and a ladybug is a beetle.
Right.
A lot of times when people call, they're like, you know that Japanese beetle or the Asian beetle, you know, the fake ladybug?
Right.
And I just have to tell people, it is a real ladybug, which is a real beetle. It is in the same family as all the other ladybugs.
Right.
The only difference is that, well, there are a lot of differences, but it's larger and it kind of is in incognito. So it doesn't look the same all the time. And it's multicolored, like the name, because it can be orange and yellow and bright red. And then it also can have zero spots or it can have 19 spots. It can have a very large variation of the number of spots.
So how do you know if what you're looking at is a multicolored Asian lady beetle?
Because it's got an N on its pronotum, which is the covering over its head. A lot of times you can't see a ladybug's head from the top, but it's got this characteristic M pattern or W if you're looking upset, at it a different way. But they look like ladybugs. They're not fake. But why are they a pest?
Well, it's an annoying thing to have in your house, and they do become a problem in vineyards as well. They get attracted to grapes.
Who doesn't like the wine?
No, I mean, we all love to take a little nip now and then of some wine, and they will get into the stuff before it goes into fermentation, and you end up with lady beetle spoilage. So lady beetles are able to reflexively bleed out a compound that is very bitter and emetic, if I remember correctly, meaning it can make you vomit if you ingest enough of it. And if that gets into wine, obviously it's not a sangria ingredient. That's not something that you want in there. And it makes it very bitter and vinegary tasting.
Yeah, it's actually like a flavor profile. I'm married to a food scientist, and it was like, this is very like ladybuggy.
Really?
Maybe interesting. That wasn't the term, but I was like, what does that mean? It's like the ladybug taint.
Interesting. Ladybug taint. Yes.
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 And I was like, what?
So they can taint our wine, but they can also taint our homes, right?
Yeah. So if you see one, and I saw one last night, one in the morning, but you can also find them crawling up the sunny side of your house on the outside. And they're just looking for a crack to get in. So that could be up in the fascia. That could be in the window. That could be like a crack under the door. And they get in. And a lot of times, what do people want to do? They want to go pick it up. And it will do the reflex bleeding out of its leg. So it's a defense mechanism. Kind of looks like it's peeing on you. If you've got it in your hand.
Out of
it looks,
its knees.
Yeah, it's not cool. And it smells really bad.
Yeah.
So a lot of times as humans, we think this is gross, right? But I'm going to turn around to be something good. If you had these awesome defenses, you would be a superhero. If you That's could true. Like reflex bleed, stink, and then also they bite.
They do bite.
And this is probably why people don't like these ladybugs, but they'll just take a little, it feels like a pinch, and it actually hurts. They'll just land on you and bite. I don't know why they're doing it. Maybe the salts, maybe the moisture. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
But they're, they're a little bit different. Well, because they're not from around here.
That's right. As the name implies, they're from Asia. They were a biocontrol experiment gone wrong down in the south, if my understanding is correct. And we talked about these before on a past episode of Arthropod with Lauren Diepenbrock. She's one of the experts.
She's cool.
She is cool. She's cool on Twitter. And hi, Lauren, if you're listening.
Hi.
That episode is really cool. And she talks a lot about these particular insects because she works with lady beetles, or did in the past. But they got out as a biocontrol agent, and they are kind of loose in the environment now. They compete supposedly with our native lady beetles, and they take up a lot of overwintering spaces. And when they see our homes, they think that they're a good place to hide out for the winter. It's like a big log with shingles and siding and everything that they can hide under. They get inside and bite us, stink all over the place, stain our curtains, clog our vacuum cleaners. It's something that it's hard to spray for. If you see a pocket of them on the outside of your house, you can always try a soapy water solution to destroy them.
Yeah, and that's all really about timing, because if you spray your house with soapy water, well, that's nice probably for your house, but it's not going to have any residual
for those
ladybugs. But as you were saying about the biological control, when they're larvae, they look like little alligators, and they eat all sorts of pests, plant pests. And so when I see them, I get pretty happy in the garden. Yeah.
I don't dislike the multicolored Asian lady beetle. It's a hard thing to talk about with our master gardener sometimes, because they'll bring me one and they want me to share their vitriol for this insect. And I really don't, because it does help us a lot in the summer. If you're a soybean farmer in particular, you probably really like the multicolored Asian lady beetle, because they destroy tons of soybean aphids in the years that we deal with that pest. So we take the good with the bad.
Right. And they're a pretty good indicator. Like, I got a lot of larvae in my yard all over the toys, all over everything.
Yeah.
And so I knew that there was, you know, that I had either aphids or lace bugs or something up in the trees.
Something
so,
they could eat.
Yeah.
So I
let them be. But I know they're going to be in my home.
Yeah. So vacuuming them up, sweeping them up with a broom, that kind of stuff is
vacuuming's probably the best, because if you try to touch them, they're going to reflex bleed. No, thank you.
But bug bombs, not effective against this.
No.
And perimeter sprays, if you time it just right.
Right. And you wouldn't have to do the whole house. All the pests that we're going to talk about today, they love the sunny side of the house. So it's going to be like the southwest, southeast. It's going to be the south-facing wall. Sometimes they like lighter color buildings, because it's going to have that warmth and that heat that they're looking for. And sometimes it's like a building out in the middle of nowhere, just a standing, amazing castle they want to get into. So that's the side of the house you're going to concentrate on, and you try to seal the gaps there. I mean, there's only so much you can do, but it's going to be that side of the house.
Well, and where you see them out on the outside of the building, concentrate there and see if you can seal up any holes in caulking around the frame of the window, or if there's a hole in your screen, replace it. Those kind of IPM strategies, they don't seem like pest control because you're not spraying something. But those are usually the best things to do to keep something like this from getting into your living room.
Right. And I can tell you that if you do spray anything, like just say they're all in your attic, you're going to have dead bugs. And then if you have dead bugs, it's going to lead to more problems. Right. So we don't recommend insecticide spraying, like secondary pests, like dermestid beetles that feed on dead body parts.
Dead bugs.
will infest. And so you don't want to have those up in there because that will also smell.
So multicolored Asian lady beetle, we'll have a picture in the blog post so you can see that beautiful M or W for Wombo on its back if you're looking at it upside down. And take a look at that and let
Wombo?
Us know if you've seen
What's
them.
Wombo?
It's a SpongeBob SquarePants quote.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Maybe after your cartoon watching days. I don't know if you like cartoons or not. But let's talk about number four. What's the next one on your list?
How about the cluster fly?
The cluster fly. What's that?
Well, I would say this is probably the least known.
Okay.
Because most people see a fly and they just want to hit it with a fly swatter anyway, so they don't take notice of it. The reason why this one is noticed is because they cluster.
Right.
So this is like why they call them that is because when they show up inside homes, there's like hundreds.
And when I look at this picture here that you have pulled up of one, I noticed that they look a lot like a housefly.
They're a little bit bigger, and they have nice golden hair. It's all about the hair, Jonathan. Right. So they've got
it's
on their
hair.
Thorax.
I like this hair.
They have this beautiful golden hair. And then they've got like a checkered kind of dark and light colored pattern on their abdomen. Uh-huh. But they also hold their wings a little bit different.
Okay.
I think when they're at rest. But we don't – they're slow moving. Hmm. So that's usually usually we're trying to outsmart the fly. We can't. This one, if you can hit them and all their friends, well, they're not too good, but they do come in again, right around the fall when it gets cold. They are actually a pretty beneficial insect though, if you don't like earthworms.
True.
So they're parasitoidive, earthworms.
Yeah. They can smell the earthworm fecal material and they will fly up to it and glue their egg to it. And the egg develops, the maggot comes out, devours the earthworm. So we see these associated sometimes with compost piles, or piles of decaying turf grass if you've got bags of turf sitting around outside that may have decomposers in it or associated with it. They could go towards that to try and find those earthworms. The people that I talk to that have these pests the most tend to be folks who come back in the middle of winter from snowbirding, though. Mm. Do you have that ever?
I don't know any snowbirds.
You don't know any snowbirds? I know some people, or I've had some clients that have called and they've come back from like Florida or Arizona, maybe in February, and they come into their house and they find hundreds and hundreds of dead flies or just flies kind of grouped together in the home. And they're afraid that an animal has died inside. It turns out usually that it's these cluster flies.
Yeah. Well, they're in the same family as the blowfly. Right. So that's very observant of them.
Yeah. So anything that we can do to prevent these from getting into the house?
Same stuff. Seal up your house and vacuum. Vacuum, vacuum, vacuum.
We're going to talk a lot about vacuuming today, I have a feeling. So the cluster fly, anything else we want to say about it? Does it bite us? Does it destroy homes?
No.
No?
No. And these overwintering pests do not mate and they do not multiply. Mm. And they are pretty inactive during the winter, so you won't see them except when there is like a sunny day that warms the house,
right.
Then everything's like, oh, it's spring, and they get all ready. And so some of them will start sneaking out of the cracks. So they'll come out of like light fixtures. If you have a ceiling fan, those little cracks, they'll start coming out. And so that's when a lot of people will notice a couple of them. And then I'm like, just get ready for spring.
Just wait.
But have your vacuum ready. It's going to be okay.
Do we see the cluster flies in the window bay or up in light fixtures, or where do people normally find them in the home?
They'll usually find them on the windowsills.
Okay.
And a lot of times when, you know, the pests come out from overwintering, they're trying to get out. So they're going to go toward light. And that's why everything gets caught in the windowsill.
Right.
You know, when everyone's like, oh, this is caught in the windowsill. It doesn't necessarily mean your window's infested. But a lot of times they're trying to get out.
So let's talk about the next bug on the list. What do we got here?
Okay, so next on the list, we've got the western conifer seed bug. We can also call it the pine seed bug. These guys...
That's a little devil.
A little bit. They also have a nice pungent odor if crushed. So it's another one that you might see inside and vacuum up. These are about half an inch. The identifying characteristic is that it's actually called a leaf-footed bug. And so its tibia, or I would say where a bug calf muscle should be, is flattened and enlarged.
Like a paddle.
Yes.
But they look kind of yoked.
Yes.
That bug does not skip leg day.
No. It's a little flat, though.
Yeah.
It's big, but flat.
No definition.
Yes. And then they've got like a zigzag pattern on their back, I guess, from viewed on the top. And they could appear like a kissing bug because of what kind of markings, Jonathan?
Well, they've got some like white keystone shapes along the edge of their, I guess, love handle like projections on the abdomen there.
It's a very pretty love handle you have there.
The flanges that go out from the abdomen there. This is a cool insect. And it's one that we deal with a lot actually in my office here in Nebraska Extension.
Oh, yeah, the girls.
Right. The nutrition team in the back, they have their own little special room. And there is one light fixture above one desk that every winter, every January or so, I get a panicked email or phone call or somebody knocking on my door saying, you got to come and get these bugs. And they just seem to be falling out of this light fixture by the dozens onto the desk below. So what are they? What is their natural habitat?
So their natural habitat, as their name implies, it's like a pine.
Right.
So.
You know what's on the outside of the building, right by where this light fixture is?
Pine trees.
A windbreak made of all pine trees.
And that's where they lay their eggs in the needles.
Right.
And the nymphs feed on the cones, and then the adults feed on another part of the plant. But so three of the overwintering five that we're talking about are true bugs. So right. What is a true bug?
A true bug is part of order Hemiptera. They have several different traits that unite them as a group, but the main thing is they all have that needle-like mouth part on the front of their face that they use to siphon out fluids for food. So for a lot of them, it's plant-based material. They use it to drink sap. So we're talking about aphids or cicadas in that case. Some of them use it on us or other animals. They drink blood. The bed bug. The kissing bug. The bat bug, all those different kinds of critters. But in this case, they're using it on a pine tree. They're a pine vampire, is what we're saying. Mm-hmm. And when they get inside, are they looking to bite us? Are they looking to attack us?
No, they're not. They're just welcome to the house party of sleepover for the winter.
They're just stinky bugs that have big calves that come into our house.
I can relate with them very well.
Okay, so what kind of strategies would you give to somebody who's dealing with these?
Vacuum,
seal up entry points, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we've got a lot of these in Lincoln. They're the plant science building gets them all over the walls on the outside.
You want to move into the top two?
Sure.
All right.
Okay, so most people are familiar with the box elder bug because this one's been around for a long time. And they actually look very similar to a lot of other bugs that we've been seeing pretty much all summer, all year.
I get a lot of questions if people's milkweed is under attack by the box elder bug because they look a lot like the large milkweed bug.
Yeah, so they are like black and red, but the difference is that they're mostly black.
Right.
And they don't have that. I think the milkweed bug is mostly red with the black stripe going across the back.
Yeah. Right?
And so these guys have like this red margin around, and then they've got like a stripe going down the head, yeah. Like a little tiny stripe, but they're mostly black. And they're, when they get on your building, they're like hordes of them.
It seems like it.
So those are normally box elder bugs. And so they like, where's their natural habitat?
I think it's box elder trees.
What a great guess. And maples and ash trees too. So
they like the seeds, right?
Yeah. So most of the time they're in the litter all around there. And then it gets cold and then they get to the houses, so.
Do they have an aggregation pheromone?
Yep, most of these things will.
Is that the smell that we detect?
No.
No? It's some other odor that we're not picking up on?
We just don't have that super sense.
We don't have the proper mutant powers, is what you're saying?
Maybe we can smell each other because we're the same species.
Entomologists have an aggregation pheromone, I think.
Yes.
We end up together at all the meetings.
Yes.
So
it's true.
Why are these a problem?
Because when they're in such large numbers and they are trying to get in, they're pretty annoying. And when you're actually walking into a house that's like on the sunny side, they're like flying around, they're crawling up. And then when they get in, before they go and find the place where they're going to overwinter, they can, you know, defecate and stink up the place.
No good.
So, vacuum.
Is that what you would do for these as well?
I feel like that's all I'm saying.
Well,
people hate vacuuming, though.
That's true. They don't. They don't like
it. Do you get a lot of calls and people are like, okay, I hear what you're saying. You want me to vacuum, but what can I spray?
I would literally rather do anything else than vacuum. That's what they seem to say. I like vacuuming. I find it soothing. The noise, the carpet after you get done.
You're like a little baby. When you start vacuuming, you fall asleep.
No, I don't fall asleep.
They like that soothing sound.
I like seeing the lines appear in the carpet, though.
Ooh, that's fun. Do you like mowing the lawn, too?
I don't like mowing the lawn.
Oh,
I don't.
Interesting.
Turf grass entomologist, and I don't like mowing the lawn.
Yeah, I have someone do that.
Do you want to talk about the number one pest in this category?
Yeah, so it's the brown marmorated stink bug.
Tell me about the brown marmorated stink bug. Terrible name, first of all.
What's marmorated?
Spotted. So why they didn't just call it the brown spotted stink bug, I don't know, but...
I don't know. But these guys are pretty new to our area.
To Nebraska.
They're an invasive species.
Where did they start out at?
East Coast.
The East Coast, like mid-Atlantic states, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, they have a website. It is Stop BMSB. And you can find the maps of the origins. And a cool thing about their website is they will show you all the native stink bugs and how to differentiate this brown marmorated stink bug from our native ones.
So what kind of tips are involved with that?
Well, for me, I think one of the biggest, I look at the antennae.
Okay.
And it's got two white stripes. And then there's the patterns along the phalanges.
Mm-hmm. It's a shield bug, so it looks like a big medieval shield. It's got that sort of overall shape. It's got that triangular scutellum there on the back you see with all the stink bugs. And if you compared it to the green stink bug, it's darker in color. We also have a gray stink bug that it looks almost identical to.
The
spiny soldier beetle or bug, that's also one. But they have different shoulder pads at the thorax end. And we'll post a picture of what they have on BMSB.
I think their snout, or whatever you want to call this, is more rounded.
Yeah, and their belly is gray and speckled rather than green and speckled.
True.
We'll definitely post that picture so that you can compare stink bugs around your house.
But they're actually a pest besides overwintering.
It's true.
It's just an extra added bonus pest. But why are they a pest outside of the house, too?
They do like to feed on different fruits and vegetables. We see them on tomatoes and peppers, and I've seen damage on apples in certain pictures from these insects as well. They have that needle-like mouth part again that they poke into things. And when they do that, they create sort of pitting. There will be sort of pithy spots on the fruit that you don't want to eat anymore because it's been browned and sort of ruined. And it can create cat-facing damage as they do that as well. The fruit will kind of grow over itself, and it looks like this really grumpy cat's face on the side of the fruit. But that is a problem, and there are control strategies for that out there. But definitely the home invasion part is what freaks the most people out, because I don't know too many orchard owners, but I do know a lot of people who have houses that get invaded with these.
This is actually more of a problem, I think, in Omaha than in Lincoln. Sometimes most times the pictures I've received are from Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a pheromone trap outside the office, which has never caught a brown marmorated stink bug. And
that's not an indictment on the trap necessarily, just perhaps on the population levels where you're at.
Yeah, and I don't know if – have you caught any?
I've never caught one in the trap either, but I have had an increase in calls and walk-ins about this over the last couple of years. When I first started here in Omaha, I never heard about it. And then I got two or three cases in 2015 and 16. Or between the winter of 2016 and like January 2017, I probably had 10 people come in about this, all sort of in the same area. And it seems like it got loose at in an industrial area in this part of town.
Well, Thelma, she was traveling.
Right.
She was traveling through.
Friend of the show, Thelma Heidel.
yeah, was she traveling through Michigan?
Yeah, she got a rental car that was from New York and was going to drive, and it had a brown marmalade stink bug kind of hanging out on it or in it.
I think on it.
On it.
She grabbed it and she took a picture and she texted me. I'm like, you
she need was to headed to the Dakotas, where I don't think it has been detected yet. So that could have been real bad.
Right. So it's, I mean, we as humans tend to spread a lot of these around. Yeah. So
again, sealing up the home and treating it with soapy water or vacuuming the ones up that you find inside. That's the sort of advice that we would provide. But with all these pests, it's good to keep in mind that they don't tend to be a health hazard. They aren't a structural hazard. They're not a veterinary hazard. They're just annoying. And we have annoyances every day. And you have to try and take care of these annoyances in a safe and an environmentally friendly manner.
Right. So if you're going to do any treatment outside, it's all about the timing. And so it has to be, it's going to be a sunny day. And that's when you're going to see them on the south side of the house. During the winter, on sunny days where it warms up inside, you may see a few things come out, but it's nothing to panic about. You just want to vacuum those up and prepare for the next time that you get a warm day, because they're up there. There's not a whole lot you can do. And it might be an annual thing, because it's just like us. Location, location, location. If you're in a great, if you've got a great overwintering site, it's like your snowbird friends. They're going to go there every winter. That's where they're snowbirding too, right?
Yeah. So seal it up as best you can. Make your house as tight as a drum. That'll help with your heating bill as well as keep bugs out. But sometimes it's just going to happen every year. You've got the house that they like. Anything else that you want to talk about here today, Jody?
Nope, we can save that for another podcast.
Another podcast, another day. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. We hope that you've enjoyed learning about insect overwintering strategies and some of the problems associated with that. You can find me on Twitter at @JLarson_UNL.
And I'm at @JodyBugsMeUNL.
And you can find our blog at arthro-pod.blogspot.com. Leave us a comment there. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us ideas for future shows if you've got them, or if you'd like to be interviewed. We'd love to hear from folks about that as well. And we hope that you'll tune in on the same bug channel, same bug time in the future, for another exciting episode of Arthropod.